All right, so calling this meeting of the Water Planning Advisory Group to order. It's July 21st, 1:33. We can start out by having the Water Planning Advisory Group members introduce themselves. And any members of the public that wish to introduce themselves may after we're done, but it is not a requirement. But if you would like to introduce yourselves, then great. I'm going to go ahead and call you guys off so we're not talking over each other. Josh, I'm Alicia Charmett. I'm a co-chair of the advisory I'm the executive director of Rivers Alliance, but I represent the Fisheries Advisory Council. Go ahead, Josh.
I'm Josh Kanzler, also a co-chair, and I represent Small Water Utilities.
Pat?
Pat Carney, Manchester Water. I represent mid-size municipal water systems.
Karen?
Karen Bernaska, I'm the Water Projects Coordinator at Save the Sound, and I represent Watershed Land.
Virginia?
I'm Virginia DeLima, formerly of the U.S. Geological Survey, and I represent a category of stream flow, academia, and ecology.
Jonathan Avery?
Yes, I represent Hazardville and Jewett City Water, which are small privately owned water companies.
Gail
Aquina Pura.
Denise?
Hi, I'm Denise Savageau. I'm the president of the Connecticut Association of Conservation Districts, and I'm also the chair of the Connecticut Council on Soil and Water Conservation.
Rex?
Hi, I'm Fred Klein. I'm an attorney with Pullman and Tomley on behalf of the Connecticut Power and Energy Society, representing the energy industry.
Trying to see who else we have here. Bruce, go ahead.
I'm Bruce Wickson of OPM, not a member.
He supports us with the minutes, however. Aaron
Budris from Naugatuck Valley COG, representing the Regional Councils of Government.
Sean?
Don't think Sean's on, is he?
Yeah. Well, I'm assuming that's...
I see him on there.
Tom Tyler, go ahead.
Tom Tyler. I'm the wastewater representative on the group. I work for the Metropolitan District.
I see Martha's connecting. Are there any other... I see Sean's trying to reconnect now, so I'll wait for him. Who am I missing here that I haven't called on as far as members of the group?
Hi, this is Ingrid Jacobs with Aquarion on behalf of Dan Lawrence.
Oh, great. Thank you, Ingrid. Welcome.
Thank you.
Sean? Sean may be having some technical difficulties. Is there anyone else I missed? All right, so Allie, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Allie Hibbard, Connecticut Deep.
Corinne?
Corinne Fitting, Connecticut Deep.
And are there any members of the public that would like to introduce themselves?
Dave Kosvinsky, Town of Portland.
Iris Kaminsky, New Haven.
Martha Smith, New Haven.
Actually, Martha Smith is an alternate, so she is.
Yeah.
Sorry, Sean, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Sean Hayden from the Lake Warmog Task Force. Oh, I'm showing up as Rose. Look at that. See what happens when you share a computer.
Anyone else before we start in on the agenda?
Alicia, this is Bruce.
Yeah.
I think we're one short of a quorum right now, but I think I heard somebody say they were representing a health district, and I didn't count that person yet. And I'm curious if that person is an alternate for David Knauf.
Bruce, I'm showing 12, including the alternates.
That's what I have, but I think we need 13.
Oh, we do? I thought we just had to have a majority. Okay, my bad.
I think we have. I think there are 24, and so you need 13.
There's only 20.
Are there?
Yeah.
I may have miscounted. I'll trust your count because it works better for the sake of the meeting.
Okay. Thanks. All right. Should we move along?
Yep. Let's
go
move
ahead.
Along. Does anybody have any changes or edits to the minutes of June 16th?
I'll make a motion that we approve the minutes as presented and place them on file.
That was Denise Savageau. Is there a second?
Second.
Who seconded that?
I did. Virginia.
Virginia Lima seconded. Is there any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Any abstention? All right, great. Well, checked off the first item on the agenda. Excellent. So we're going to move on now to the Water Planning Council update. Virginia, do you want to do the implementation work group update?
Sure. We had an implementation work group meeting just immediately prior to this. We got an update from Marianne Dickinson of the Alliance for Water Efficiency. As most of you know, she's working on a grant for discussion of topics related to implementing the state water plan. She's planning a workshop on rates for next March, March 18th. As part of that, there will be a case study of one or two water suppliers in terms of having an in-depth look at how their rate structure works. They've gotten one volunteer, which is the Regional Water Authority, and perhaps they're looking for another volunteer of a municipal utility to be part of that. They also, beyond that actual workshop, one of the other things that they're looking at is possible legislation or regulatory changes that we might want to look at. There were 9 that were proposed, and I had that open someplace, and I'm not able to find it at the moment. But she also sent out a matrix that was asking people to rank or to express opinions to analyze the nine possibilities with certain criteria. And I trust that most of the people on this call got that, because it was sent to a very wide distribution of folks. And as of this morning, she'd gotten 11 responses. So anybody on this call who received that matrix or who would like to receive that matrix, please do fill it out. It's not completely straightforward, but don't worry about that. It'll still give them useful information. Going through that, there were 2 issues that stood out that were dominated from the 12 responses she got. One was looking at the possibility of having Connecticut law mirror the water sense criteria for various fixtures, toilets, showers, urinals, those types of things. And the other one was looking at the issue of water loss. And so because in the data that she has so far, those showed an overwhelmingly strong response, the Alliance for Water Efficiency is going to move forward on those 2 topics as we await more input from more people. So as I said, if you have that matrix, please take a look at it and fill it out. Send it to Marianne. If you need that matrix, please let me know and I'll make sure that you get a copy of it. The one thing that came up that is pertinent to this group is that the process that we go through when the implementation work group has finished one of their topical subgroups and created a report is that the advisory group then has input to it. In the original design of the implementation group, we acknowledge that the advisory group would be advisory to us as well as to the Water Planning Council and represents a broader spectrum of stakeholders. And so to get that input, we want the advisory group to be reviewing reports that are coming out of the implementation group. Okay. You were all sent the white paper that was created from the domestic groundwater well topical subgroup. I would like to, if you have any concerns about it, and Alicia, I'm not sure how you plan to handle that if during this meeting, but we would like to get input from you folks to see if there are any concerns that need to be, any adjustments that need to be made, if you have any suggestions that you would like to see incorporated or any issues with what was in there. On that topic, we agreed that if there were issues that the advisory group had with something coming out of the implementation work group that the implementation work group did not agree with, that the IWG would respond in writing to those concerns and explain why they disagreed and had not accepted those proposed changes. And that information would be forwarded to the Water Planning Council. In terms of the ongoing topical subwork groups, there's one, as you recall, that's really looking at the drought work that was done in the 2016-2017 drought. What they have seen so far is that they are in general agreement with the decisions that were made, but they had some concern. That the group was not.
Yeah, it's cool. I'll take it over there.
Could somebody please mute? And they're also, each member of the committee is asked to come up with their top 10 recommendations. They also wanted to acknowledge that currently the dry conditions that we've had this summer, the interagency drought work group has been meeting more frequently, and so they were pleased to see that. We had presented three proposed new groups to the Water Planning Council at their meeting two weeks ago. One of them that was unanimously agreed to by the Water Planning Council was looking at water quality in domestic wells. Mike Dietz is going to chair that. And some of the types of folks that would be involved in the discussion would be the real estate industry, health districts, USGS, testing labs, home builders, so it's a different cast of characters than the one that they did so far. They will be looking at input from other states. Lori Matthew brought up the issue that they should consider the cost of doing some of the things that may address water quality in domestic wells or the treatment thereof. And also, we all noted that one of the topics of discussion will be the privacy of any data that might come out of this, how we would handle privacy issues, site-specific issues. And so that's going to be something that the group is going to be taking into consideration. Another group was what was originally called the Marketing and Outreach Topical Subgroup. There was some concern about the word marketing, and we pretty much decided to nix that and rename it something like communication and outreach or education and these types of things. Lou Birch agreed to chair that group. And so we also said that in that group, we should be including as many different voices as possible, and including local health districts, COGS, and several others. We had a long discussion on regionalization and interconnections. That was the third proposed topical subgroup. At the Water Planning Council, Lori had requested that we include wastewater as part of that so as to have a whole water perspective. The 3 out of 4 of the Water Planning Council members agreed with that. And so what's going to happen is that we're going to reconvene the group that wrote the proposal originally and modify it to have more of a whole water perspective. Now, several of the people on this call were also on that call. If you want to add anything that I may have omitted, please speak up. Okay, that's what we did.
So,
Fred, I just have a quick question. In light of current drought conditions, are actions being taken by any particular water companies? And if so, where in the state, if you know?
Not answering that directly, but in a related topic, one of the changes that is in the new water plan is that there was a new heads up stage that was included, a stage one that was within the industry, within the state agencies. There would be a, hey guys, it's getting dry out here, we need to start paying attention. That the state did enter that stage. It's not something that really goes out to the public, but that was an action that was taken in terms of the drought. But your specific question, Fred, in terms of does anybody know if any industries or any of the utilities are doing anything, can somebody speak to that?
This is Bruce. I can't give precise descriptions of which companies are doing what, but I can tell you that some companies have issued various declarations. And if you go to a DPH website that I unfortunately can't tell you the directions to find it, but if you go to the drinking water section website, they do have a page that identifies what are companies that currently have declarations.
Virginia, this is Margaret. Apologies to be late. I had a similar question that might have fit into your drought private well section of your report.
Okay.
We had one of our colleagues that we work with lives along the Chepauk River. Many people along that river, their private wells are actually in the, you know, they're actually in the river aquifer. A very aggressive neighbor who's been in trouble often, he has put, I think, 2 new wells or 1 big new well right next to the river, not 100 feet away, but like 15 feet away. And he's running 3 or 4 commercial sprinklers, kind of nonstop. So I did advise our colleague, first of all, to go and get more information on the well, and second, to see if there were any rules regarding how long you could run these sprinklers, and third, maybe to check with his town and see if they had ever considered an ordinance to put limits on sprinklers in a drought. The river is low flow right now, and there's more than enough water coming out of it. So I don't know if I don't know who I should speak to, or if you're taking up this kind of thing under private wells and drought. It might be all right in, I don't know, March, but the river's really low, and this is a lot of water coming out, and it's probably a legal well. It's the town hall did tell my colleague, well, he is taking river water, but of course, technically, he's not taking river water because it's a little bit away from the river. So I know of a couple of other streams that have that kind of problem, and I didn't know where that issue would be addressed, or maybe on several fronts.
But it's still under the 50,000 gallons a day?
I have no idea, but it's a groundwater well. I don't know if it's under the 50,000 gallons a day.
Corinne, can you speak to this at all?
If if it is over 50,000 gallons a day, then it should have a diversion permit. But a lot of times irrigation wells don't pump that much. So typically they fly under the radar.
Right. So I will ask him to check the, I guess the whatever, plate number, whatever it is, on how much water this system can pump. And would another bit of advice to say that the town itself could pass some, or could it, pass ordinances that relate to irrigation when there's a drought of some sort declared? Or low flow conditions measured? There is a gauge downstream.
I'm not sure. I know there are some pretty broad zoning authorities for water protection, so it may come under that, but I'm not sure on that, Margaret.
Okay. Well, so I'll ask him to check the volume coming out and also whether his town could do anything. The town, well, there's a backstory to this, but the guy carries a gun, so the town approaches him very carefully. But they are interested in water protection, so I'll tell him also to look at his town regulations and the interest in the town. Okay, thank you.
Now, Fred, just your question, was it, have any of the utilities issued any restrictions? Was that your question?
My question was,
I was
getting
back to Fred's question, but
you're
on
mute,
Fred. You're on mute.
My question?
Sorry, Fred's, you know, all this electronic stuff. No, I was just wondering whether or not the various utilities or water companies have issued any kind of drought alerts or implemented any restrictions, or whether or not any towns under their ordinances have issued any restrictions, whether anybody, you know, we've got a major brain trust, tremendous experience, you know, on the phone. And I was just wondering whether or not, you know, people were aware, but I don't want to take away from the agenda.
I know that Aquarian has reached some of their triggers. But I'm not sure. There is at least one utility that has reached triggers. And it has, I know it's prompted some conversations among some communities as to whether they do need some sort of ordinance, particularly because there are some communities who have such a very rich mix of different water providers, whether it be private wells, three different providers, three different utilities. It sparked some discussion in some communities about this.
Speaking for Hazardville and Jewett City, which is in the Enfield Griswold area, we had close to a record pumping in June. And that is where we experienced a lot of outflow, but we still have a full pond in Jewett City. And we haven't done any advisories, as Fred was talking about. We have noticed that the peak weekends, which is the weekends where we notice a lot of usage, has tapered off. And so we're not getting as heavy usage as we did in the month of June. And I do query on that every week. And so it has the rain. There has been enough recovery in rain, at least to drop the usage.
That's good news. I think we can hit table some of the general drought discussions for the interagency drought work group update. And I think, Virginia, had you finished your update? But I just wanted to follow up on Virginia's update with, and I apologize, I thought the white paper had already gone around, but it didn't. So after this, I will send the white paper around. So you all have an opportunity to really look at it. Please get your comments on the white paper, if you have any. Copy myself and Josh. Sorry about that. Copy myself and Josh, and we will see if we want to make a general recommendation from the group based on what you all send and your reactions to that paper. Virginia, is that okay for a timeline for us to send something over after our next meeting?
Sure.
Okay. So I will send that out immediately after this meeting. And please get comments back by August 12th. I will put that in an email.
Alicia?
Yes.
This is Karen. I think you did send it out. I'm just looking for it. Look back to your email on July 10th. All I know is I got a copy of a letter, maybe Virginia sent it out, from John Hudak, who said, thank you, Virginia, this is well done. He will miss the next meeting and send his comments.
I had thought that I had sent it out, but I'm...
You sent it out.
I thought you did, too. Someone did.
Okay.
It came from Virginia, and it was dated July 9th.
Okay, I apologize. I thought it had gone out, but I was looking in under different... Okay, I apologize. I did somehow miss that.
It did go out.
And so in that, it was, please review the white paper and be prepared to discuss any proposed changes at the advisory group meeting on today.
Yeah.
So
then you've all had ample time. And if there is, does anybody have any reaction to it? If you've had a chance to look at it. And I apologize. Somehow I did miss that. Okay, so hearing none, what I will do
Alicia, this is Karen. I'm sorry. Like I said, John Hudak did write because he's on vacation. And Virginia, he sent it directly to you, so at least you have John's comments.
Right. I've got John's comments. And that's the only one that I recall receiving.
Well, that's the only one that I got that went to the group.
Yeah, I'm just scanning my email now and I don't see that's the only one that I received. And so Alicia, I don't know how you want to handle this. If because people were supposed to get their comments in by today, whether you want to say, you know, no more comments, move forward, or whether you want to give people more time, that's up to you.
I'll give a little bit more time, but not as much as before. I will compile it before the next implementation work group meeting, unless there's anything really glaring. So give it to me by Friday. And then I will send it over to Virginia for the next meeting. And I will resend it so it's at the top of your inbox.
And John's did go to the whole group so that you can see what his suggestions were.
All right. There'll be a last chance to comment. Excuse me. Were there any other water planning, state water plan matters that anyone needs to bring up? All right, so on to old business. Is there someone that can give a WUC update? There is nothing new that's happened since the last meeting, then?
I don't think there's been anything new. I know with the Eastern WUC, there hasn't been anything new.
Okay.
I can't speak for the others.
Nothing new with the Western WUC either.
Thank you, Ingrid. All right, is there anything COVID-19 related that we should be aware of? I know there has, since our last advisory group meeting. There has been some press that's gone around, as Jonathan mentioned, of an increase in water use that's unusual, even for peak demand time. Is there any other issues that we should be aware of, that we should discuss, or just a heads up that everyone might be dealing with at this point? All right. Well, that one was easy too. The Interagency Drought Work Group has continued to meet. According to the website, they are currently still in stage one, which is sort of a pre-drought heads-up phase of drought. It signifies abnormally dry conditions. I know what we're seeing from the stream flow side are some streams that are doing well that have received quite a bit of the rain, but we're seeing some that might be winning some or setting some records for instantaneous low flows for on record, which is a little bit scary. Unfortunately, the reservoir status summary, the last time I checked, which was yesterday, hadn't been updated since June, but I'm assuming that the rain that we received was helpful, at least for the surface water reservoirs. And it appears that the groundwater wells did see some benefit from the rain we got in early July, at least for the short term. Is Corinne or anyone else with the agency, are you aware of the next, when is the interagency work group meeting again? There was nothing on the website.
This is Bruce, and the group is scheduled to meet again on Thursday. I just put it on the state public meeting website this morning, and it'll go on the water site later today.
So I have to say that a lot of the information that's coming in to the Interagency Drought Work Group, someone was kind enough to forward some of the presentations from the National Weather Service and the USGS to me. And I have to say, the information that they're getting is really quite good. We'll see what happens on Thursday, but things continue to be dry. The forecasts, who knows? We expected 3 inches of rain with a named storm that for some of us turned out to be nothing. I think the northwest corner might have received a decent amount of rain, but you know, we didn't see much here in central Connecticut. So we have to continue to watch and continue to, I know we're continuing to message conservation and trying to keep the peak water use somewhat down and watching outdoor water use. So
I had to fill my rain barrel with a hose.
Isn't that cheating?
Well, my rain barrel hooks up to a drip water irrigation system in my vegetable garden, and so I needed to fill it with a hose.
Any questions about the activity of the Interagency Drought Work Group, or questions about the status, drought status at this time, or any comments? Okay. Moving right along. I believe we got a decent enough report from Virginia on the Alliance for Water Efficiency work, but I want to give you all an opportunity to ask questions about what the Alliance for Water Efficiency is doing, or if you would like any details from Virginia on the report we got today.
Hi,
Hi, Alicia. I don't have any comments or questions, but I do have a comment. And that was on the worksheet that was sent out, the Excel spreadsheet. And Virginia suggested making sure that people submit that, so reminding people to do that. But one thing that I found interesting is that there's two topics that I continue to see as overlapping, and I may be the only person, but we are continuing to handle drought and water conservation separately. And I certainly understand that people want to talk about drought only in the emergency situation. But when we talk about drought preparedness and resiliency, we're talking about water conservation. And once the drought work group for the state water plan finishes up, and hopefully we'll have a report from Aquarion on how they got out of the drought and what they're doing now to make sure they don't get back into a drought in southwestern Connecticut, is all about water conservation. So I just want to point out that I don't see it as like dealing with drought and or dealing with water conservation as two separate issues. I certainly understand that is a challenge until we take care of the rate issue with the public utilities. And that's a big issue. And I think that's why we're moving forward with that whole rate piece. But I do want to put that out that I think it's, you know, if we move up drought planning, which is one of the ones that was kind of rising to the top from the 11 comments that have been reported, but water conservation isn't also moved to the top. I don't think we're getting where we need to go. And it kind of gets into what Margaret was talking about previously, is we're constantly not talking about water conservation. And like I said, although I understand we're not going to have the bigger conversation until the rate thing gets taken care of, I think the drought this year, what we had not only from a drought perspective, but the idea of that there was a very, very high demand for utilities, even though they had plenty of water, there was a really high demand that was impacting their ability to deliver water. We need to be talking about water conservation sooner rather than later. So I'm putting that out there. I'm going to be making comments to AWE in terms of those two topics, because I don't see them as separate. So I'm putting that out there again, because I think we're not, if we only talk about drought and don't talk about water conservation, we're never going to get where we need to go.
Thank you, Denise.
And in terms of Aquarion and the Southwest Fairfield County, we are in a drought trigger two at this point, and that's based on the predictive modeling that we're using to try to identify and get ahead of the reservoir levels and usage. We are are experiencing high demands throughout all of our systems, and particularly in the Southwest Fairfield County. We are emphasizing conservation, and we're looking at conservation in other systems throughout, for example, in Simsbury. And if you go to our website, conservation is the number one thing that shows up on our website. So we are pushing that, particularly in these times when everyone's home. It's a big issue, so we definitely agree with Denise on that.
Yeah, and I have to commend Aquarion. They just stepped it up when we had the last drought that we're doing the analysis on, and they've now incorporated that water conservation into all their planning, and I think we need to look at that example and just move it into the bigger discussion, not just with Aquarion, but statewide.
Okay, is there anything else on the Alliance for Water Efficiency work? Great, we will move on to the Watershed Lands work group. Margaret or Karen, do you want to field this?
Well, I'll start and then I'll turn it over to Margaret. We would like to talk a bit about or bring you up to speed on the land conveyance in Cheshire, the DOT land, the aquifer protection land. I would like to tell you that the questionnaire, we got some good feedback from people. We got some input from DEEP. And the one very interesting point that has come up on more than one occasion, and I will thank Aaron Boudris for starting this, is the importance of and the availability of GIS mapping. So people are all aware of what type of land is being conveyed. We are looking at this questionnaire. The draft has gone. Margaret has sent it to the aide, to the co-chair of the Public Health Committee. I think we have to do a little more work, and I'm going to be picking other people's brains on how to incorporate GIS into what's requested, or the mapping from what's requested of communities. But that is kind of moving forward, and maybe now that the legislature is coming back into session, we may get a little bit more response from the legislators, both the leaders and the committee chairs. When it comes to the specific conveyance of the Cheshire land, it was brought up at the Water Planning Council meeting, and I believe many of you are already aware that in early July, DEEP wrote a letter to Cheshire saying that they are not in compliance with the aquifer protection regulations. Now, what that will mean to this conveyance, I'm not sure. I am going to turn it over to Margaret, who has been, you know, discussing this with, like I said, the legislative aid of the Public Health Committee. But that is kind of a new issue that was just brought to light. Like I said, I think July 2nd was the date of the letter from DEEP. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Margaret, and then if anybody has any other information or questions, we'd be happy to talk about it. Margaret, the floor is yours.
So I think you covered that we haven't made much progress with the Public Health Committee, but when the session starts, I think we can speak to Mary Doherty Abrams and also to Jonathan and, you know, raise the issue with them again. Mary Doherty Abrams, her aide, I think, is very good, Gabrielle Diaz. It's just hard, and I'm sure the senator has no desire to jump into this issue. But she does have a good record on these kinds of things. So both the process for doing conveyances with the maps that you're talking about and the actual conveyance itself, I think we'll be taking up as best we can in a week or two. We're kind of stopped now, unless somebody has a better end to either, Jonathan, or particularly Mary Abrams. The fact that Cheshire never got into compliance, and I wonder about Southington, because part of the land is an aquifer protection area for Southington water. So I don't think we've had a chance to look at what their status is. Regional Water Authority has a little bit at the southern end, and I have no doubt that they're in compliance with everything. I mean, I guess we could check it pro forma, but I'm wondering, and even if Southington would have liked to comment, or did they comment, that their recharge area was the subject of a conveyance. And it raised also in my mind something I've been wondering about, is how well is this aquifer protection program working? I think it's fairly strong for new construction, new projects. Has a lot of off ramps, I believe, otherwise. But more important, it's kind of an honor system sort of thing, and some towns even have their own aquifer protection regulations and perhaps are paying attention, but others don't. So I think it's something that should go onto our agenda at some point. How well is the program working in terms of protection, and can anything be done to help it work better? And then the final thing I sent over to you, Karen, and to Alicia, was that Betsy Garris sent me a draft language for changes in the zoning law relating to housing and affordable housing. And she included the comments that Connecticut Water Works Association had written and comments that Rivers Alliance had written on the use of alternative sewage treatment systems which could be part of a program in this new approach to housing, which we've kind of heard about from Roland Lombard, but she did have some draft language. Karen and I talked, and we just agreed this underscores the importance in the Watershed Lands Group of looking not only at lands that are owned by a water company, but looking at the lands that are in the recharge area, because DPH, this housing, I don't know how completely their plans will go forward, but they're fairly aggressive plans for building different kinds of housing here, there, which becomes very difficult since the state pulled funding for affordable housing some years ago. But it underscores that DPH only occasionally, I think, responds in writing or even personally with a personal appearance when they get a notice of a project in a utilities recharge area, not owned by the utility. And so I think the Watershed Lands Group, we've had it on our agenda, and John was quite interested in a fairly wide approach to protecting recharge areas. And I think if there are these, if there's new housing, new zoning and new housing rules coming along, we should be sure those protections for recharge area are stronger than they are now, whether through DPH or some other means, I don't know. But that was the other thing that happened in the last week. And I look forward to working with, in our group and with CWWA on this issue. That's all I have.
If I may just underscore what Margaret said, considering, or we'd like to have another Watershed Lands Work Group meeting. The CWWA letter on their concern about the alternate septic treatment system brought up the fact that we still have ongoing discussions with DPH on any sort of major project on drinking water watershed land that may have an adverse effect on water quality of the land. And, this COVID situation has been, DPH is, I'm not giving them a pass, but it's been extremely busy. They now have they have an acting commissioner. The new one has not been appointed yet. So we really feel that it should look at this. And this is a watershed lands project that started off as looking at green energy projects, but we're now looking at a broader range, and we would like to continue the discussions with the DPH.
I haven't had a chance to look at this fully, and I just want to make sure I understand. This is draft language. Are they considering putting this forward for the special session? Because this is something that did not have a public hearing. No. So this is for next session.
My understanding, and Margaret, correct me if I'm mistaken, is that according to Betsy Guerra of CWWA, this would be for next session in 2021.
Okay.
And I would also just like to add, going back to Cheshire, that in my discussions with the Southington Water Company, they're very interested. They have worked with developers in various towns before, but to underscore what Margaret has said, that the assumption is that any sort of development that would be permitted would be safe because it was covered under the aquifer protection regs. And now that we have found out that that Cheshire is not in compliance with the aquifer protection regulations, it is a bit of a concern. It is a concern.
And just also for clarification, the land is still administratively with DOT. So it has not gone to the Properties Review Board.
That's my understanding. Yes.
All right, is there anything else? Margaret, you're still on mute if you're talking.
Ooh, lucky you, I said. The title of the paper does say draft for the special session. And Karen is right, it'll come up the next session. I would point out that that Roland Lamar has been talking about these changes for quite a while. And one thing we have to watch out for as enviros and maybe water utilities is that much of this housing is aimed at creating new affordable housing. And Lamar always accuses me of only wanting to keep poor people out of my neighborhood where there's water. And so it's important when we look at these projects that we look upon them. And believe me, most of them, I think, probably will be private development with little affordable housing, but that we're not against affordable housing. I actually favor various proposals to increase it, but we're worried about development in a recharge area that will impair the water source. However, whatever kind of development.
This is Fred. I know that a few months ago, we saw some language that would expand the aquifer protection. I believe it was the legislation. Has anything new been developed that we should be sharing so that we can all take a look at it?
That sounds good.
If you have that language, I have not seen any. I don't know about you, Margaret.
I'm talking about, this was probably 4 or 5 months ago. There was some language, it was distributed around this group, a number of people commented on it. Is that what we're talking about, or are we talking about something else?
Oh, are you talking about the questionnaire?
I think that it was a questionnaire there as well, yeah.
Oh no, this is a major rewrite of the state zoning law. So it's about a 35-page, would you say, copy of the statute with deletions and changes and a whole new section. And that's what Betsy went through. I sent it to our zoning commission. It'll totally put them to sleep. But that's what Betsy, as I understand, and CWWA wanted to look at these proposed changes to zoning law that would apply in recharge areas.
So I don't think there was language proposed to strengthen the aquifer protection laws and regulations. It was mostly just a way to flag land that had any aquifer protection or drinking watershed lands for the legislators who are making a decision on that conveyance.
Okay. I would be very interested if someone could share that with me. I would appreciate it if somebody could send it.
Okay. I've been having the final questionnaire. Right? Is that what you're asking?
Not the questionnaire. The proposed zoning law changes.
Oh, okay. The affordable housing.
If that's what it is, in particular, I'm concerned interested, I should say, because of any potential effect that it might have on energy projects, like you say, green energy projects.
Yes, I don't know, but I'm sure Betsy wouldn't mind us forwarding to you. I thought you all probably had it, but I will send it along. I didn't see anything like that, but you'll be looking more closely.
Thank you, Margaret.
Okay, anything else for the Watershed Lands Group? There is no update at this time on the next two. So we can move on to new business. The return to place-based meetings is here. I think mostly as a placeholder for, it was my understanding that under FOIA, that if we were to have this meeting previous to the governor's changes and executive orders, we would have to have a physical location in order to hold the meeting for the public to be able to attend. And we're still waiting to hear what's going to happen once, I don't know who I would, even knows when we might get back to normal. I think we can have that discussion further on down the road, because I do not believe that we can even think about when that might be. So unless anybody has any questions or concerns about that, I think we can probably remove it from the agenda until, gosh, I don't know, we have a vaccine. So anything before we move on to the nominating committee? All right. Who is giving the report for the nominating committee? Is that supposed to be John, who's not going to be here?
John's not here. I asked John to get the nominating committee back together for the 2021 slate. And even though I think we don't have any vacancies at this time, I don't know, Karen or Aaron, if you guys have met or talked about this at all.
No, we have. What John did, just for your information, he had done, we have a full slate. He had reviewed the attendance, and of all of our 20 members, there's only one who does not meet our attendance requirements. I had mentioned that I would get back to him after this meeting and let you know whether she was in attendance or not, and she is not. Just so you're aware that the people who are, according to our original slate, original proposal, we have we would be putting forward as of attendance right now the group that would go, that would be, actually their term would go into effect January 1, 2021 and last until December 31st, 2004. And that would be a group that currently consists of Josh Kanzler, Carol Haskins, Tom Tyler, David Knopf, and I'm missing one here.
I believe it's the new guy, Jeff.
And Jeff Pugliese, yes. Right. So those would be the current names that we would have to put forward to we would have to approve probably at our next meeting to send to the Water Planning Council and ask for their approval for terms beginning January 1 of 2021. And we will get back to you, the person that it happens to be Joan Nichols of the Connecticut Farm Bureau. John has contacted her, and she is considering whether she's able to continue.
Okay. All right. Next item.
Is there any other new business? Anyone have anything before we move on to public comments? All right. Is there any public comment?
Hi, so this is Iris. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
So just in general, I said this before, but I'm concerned. I know everybody's busy with COVID, and I'm concerned about the use of chemicals for, pesticides and things like that, especially now that everybody's home and taking care of their gardens and that we're shoreline. So I don't know if this is getting any attention, and there are some pesticides that are, or maybe herbicides is more correctly to say, that are banned in New York. I don't know if that's significant, if the people from the water utility could say if that's significant, if that is a threat to any of our waters. I know for sure that it is a threat on the Sound, especially, when people have their water shore properties and now you have you're afraid of mosquitoes on top of everything else, and a lot of these chemicals are being sold in nurseries and Home Depot, so that is one of my concerns, and I wanted to know if somebody is addressing that.
This is Margaret. We could take it up in the watershed lands group in recharge areas. I know that we used to work with Jim McInerney, who was a chairman down at Aquarian, and I believe he and I'm sure some other water companies did have protocols for herbicide and pesticide use, that it would be good to find out what those are. So that would be for the, you know, major water utilities. I don't know if Jonathan has anything where he is. So, but where could we take it up? I think probably in the Watershed Lands Group, but maybe elsewhere in the implementation group, which Alicia or Virginia would know about.
Yeah, I did comment on this too, Marianne Dickinson, because from my perspective, pollution prevention is very cost effective. And if you need to clean up, it's like, you know, it's sometimes, you know, it's extremely costly and you need very sophisticated knowledge around that.
So as far as implementation goes, so during when the state water plan was being devised, there was a conscious effort to focus more on quantity issues than quality issues. So I don't believe we even really looked much at pesticides as far as recommendations in the state water plan. And that's not because it wasn't important. It was more of a fact that we do have some fairly, and again, not strong enough. And if you go look at CEQ's report on pesticides and sort of the lack of enforcement, the Council on Environmental Quality did a report on pesticides. This was a couple of years ago, and you can find it on the Connecticut Council on Environmental Quality. They did a very good report on it. And a lot of these things are handled in the legislature because they are statutory and regulatory. So, you know, a big focus has been as far as pesticides and pesticide reduction goes and regulatory, there's been a focus on the fact that, you know, DEP gets a large, fairly decent revenue from pesticide permitting, but yet doesn't have the enforcement, the money to do a lot of the enforcement and inspections around pesticide applications. And of course, there has been a lot that's been pointed out on the fact that, you know, you can have, you know, several different pesticide applications at one time on a property that many people do find problematic. I mean, I think, you know, we can possibly discuss this in the water planning advisory group, but I don't know. I we welcome to hear everybody's thoughts about this. It's been more of a legislative push in general. Every session there is some sort of attempt to really get a better handle on pesticide application. And it is a water issue for sure. But.
So if I could jump in, Alicia,
sure.
You're correct in terms of the state water plan. It focused mostly on quantity and not necessarily the quality. And that's because I think they felt a lot of the quality issues were being handled by other programs under DEEP, particularly, you know, obviously the point source discharges with the wastewater treatment and some of those programs. But more to our point, and what Iris brought up is the work that's being done under the 319 program, which is the non-point source program. The Soil and Water Conservation Districts, as well as Save the Sound and some others, particularly working on Long Island Sound, have really focused on this and have focused on, you know, a whole host of reducing non-point source pollution, particularly related to stormwater, but certainly related to the way we manage our lawns. And there are pilot programs, for example, in Niantic and whatever, looking at this. So this is definitely something that's being looked at. I think a lot of the towns are looking at it under their stormwater management permits, the MS4 permits. one of the challenges that I think for the Water Planning Council Advisory Group is that a lot of the work of the 319 as well as the Long Island Sound is that their focus is on impaired waters and not necessarily source water protection. So one of the things we probably need to be looking at is how do we make sure that when we're doing non-point source pollution protection, when we're doing watershed management, that we're making sure that we're doing not only that on impaired waters, but we're actually looking at drinking water supplies as well. And actually, I'm going to talk about a program next that I, you know, in terms of a public comment I wanted to make. But there are groups looking at that, the Connecticut Council on Soil and Water Conservation, which is another state agency. This is all we do is work on non-point source pollution. So there are groups handling this, and the idea is making sure that it's on source water as well as impaired watersheds. And I think that that's something we really need to be pushing.
And
Alicia, when you're ready for take a next public comment, just let me know. And maybe other people who raise their hands. So whenever you want to call on me for that, I can touch base.
Go ahead. Iris, are you?
Well, it's a little Pandora box that Denise touched upon. So I know that a lot of times pesticides and herbicides are related to as non-point because when we check them, it's at a non-point area. But when somebody gets a permit and is at somebody's lawn in a household, there is a very accurate address and it's known. So, and it really literally, when the applier comes, it applies from a hose. So I know it's referred to as non-point and we don't have to select, I could get an answer separately from you, but if there's a quick, I don't know if it even matters for this conversation because I think we all know what we're talking about. Is that right?
There is a little bit of law on your side in that about 4 or 5 years ago, the Supreme Court ruled the EPA ruled and Supreme Court upheld it that aerial spraying, the general permit in Connecticut for spraying, which covers large areas, does follow the law. The court had ruled we don't have very many large areas that are sprayed, just a few. This would be forest and water. And the court ruled that these were point source releases. They said you can't just fly over and spray a whole forest or spray a whole lake and say what you're saying. Oh, well, it's all dispersed when it lands. So there's a little bit of law that's applicable, a tiny bit in Connecticut, but the principle might be of interest to you.
I think there's two different things going on. The application is point source, but once you spray something over a large area, how it gets into the watershed, how it goes through the soils, that's when it becomes non-point source because it's not then just a direct discharge into a pipe. Then it somehow gets into our water bodies very diffusely, and that's when it becomes non-point source,
okay,
and that's
you.
How it's regulated. So it's
you're
correct in both instances, but it's two different. It's not when it's applied, it's what happens after it's applied that it becomes non-point source. So those are two different instances.
I'll send you both the court ruling.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. That actually clarifies. Thank you.
Okay. Are you all set, Iris?
Yeah. Great. Thank you.
Okay, go ahead, Denise.
Okay, so under source water protection, the Connecticut Council on Soil and Water Conservation, and I have been talking about this before, we did receive a grant from NRCS to do some source water protection work in Connecticut. And for those of you who aren't familiar with the term source water protection, source water under EPA terms is the same thing as drinking water. And I know a lot of people understand that who are on this group, but not everybody. So always want to make sure people understand when we're talking about that. In the Farm Bill, NRCS has money now to work on source water protection. They recognize it nationally as a major effort, so they're really looking at that. So we received $205,000 last year We were able to get them to increase that to another $70,000. So the program has expanded a little bit, and I just wanted to go into that. It took us a little while because of COVID to get going, but you're going to probably be hearing about some work on that, what we're doing. We've now contracted with UConn Clear to do the GIS work, and they're going to be doing land use mapping at the parcel layer for every single surface water supply and actually the aquifer protection areas. So we're going to be having parcel layer data in all of the public drinking water supply watersheds, so we can look at what the specific land uses are, what the land use activities are, and potential sources of pollution. So we're hope that's going to be a two-year project, again, led by UConn Clear. And we have some different folks who are going to be working on that. Eric McPhee with Department of Public Health is helping lead that effort. And Mike Dietz is also on the subcommittee helping us look at the technical work that's going to be done there. The other piece of this is we're doing a watershed management plan for all of the Farm River watershed that we've mentioned. And so that's moving forward, and they've hired Fuss and O'Neill to help with that, the update of that watershed plan. So that activity is now moving forward. With the additional $70,000 that USDA put into this program, we're now also working on the Little River in eastern Connecticut. And that is, they already have a watershed management plan under 319, but they're going to expand that to include source water protection and make sure that it fits into what NRCS calls the NWQI program, which is the National Water Quality Initiative program. So doing that opens up the avenue for both 319 money as well as additional NRCS funds. So both the Farm River and Little River will have watershed management plans that open them up for additional funding from both, like I said, the EPA 319, as well as NRCS funding as well. And then the last piece I just wanted to mention, because it involves some of the folks who are on this call, is we're going to be doing some training and outreach just as a bigger picture in terms of what source water protection is. Because again, people tend to kind of get confused about source water. Is source water headwaters or resource versus the EPA term, where source water is defined as drinking water supply. So we're going to be doing some training on that, primarily for agency people because we even have agency people, whether it be Department of Public Health, DEP, Conservation Districts, USDA, folks who are used to working in one avenue, particularly non-point source, may not have heard that term because it's very specific to EPA and to people who work in public drinking water supply. So we're going to be doing agency training on that, as well as then there'll be two workshops looking at the bigger public that's involved with watershed protection and source water protection, whether it be the utilities, whether it be a lot of the nonprofits and the general public, municipalities and whatever. So we'll be doing a couple of workshops, one each year, on different ways of looking at non-point source pollution and source water protection. So we'll be probably contacting this group to see who wants to be involved in terms of any of the trainings and those types of things. So if you are interested, just let me know and we'll get your name on any kind of lists for when we start doing those trainings. And if anybody has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Thank you.
All right, are there any questions for Denise? Is there any further public comment? So our next meeting is August 18th. Same place, right here. This will be the place for who knows how long. So the Water Planning Council will be meeting on August 4th. And as of now, the Implementation Work Group will also be meeting on the 18th. So there's nothing else. I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? I'll make sure you're on mute. All right, guys, thank you. Stay cool. Stay hydrated. Take care.